It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
What's up and welcome to another episode of the Grind Line podcast. I am your host, Greg. I am here tonight with Ryan. I can't even right now. Tyler is not with us for the reason of we were given, I have meat stuck in my throat. Yes, you heard that right. Tyler has meat stuck in his throat and cannot join us tonight. Ryan, have you ever had meat stuck in your throat to where you couldn't join a podcast?
Nope.
Like a serious question.
No. He's not choking. He's not choking on the meat. Let's get that part clear real quick.
This is going to get bad.
But this little won't come out right now is the direct quote from Tyler. So do with that as you will.
Tyler did not pull the meat out of his mouth. I'm going to have to beep the first F word of the episode because something in YouTube says if you swear or drop an F-bomb within the first 7 seconds, like, you may not be able to monetize your video, which is weird.
Ow.
Yeah. But yeah, go check us out on YouTube. You can see me and Ryan talk about Tyler's meat throat, which is not a sentence I thought I would ever say. But how are you doing, Ryan?
Great. That's the dead season. But I got a double two-hearted. Does that count for something?
Yeah, I have the headless Gourdsman, which is the barrel aged maple syrup with maple syrup and spices from Founders. It's amazing. I like pumpkin stuff. You can call me basic.
We need to have another beer, a beer off.
Yeah. Oh, Founders, we should get back on that.
The one the last time, but I feel like we could have some definite competition going this time.
If anyone listening like works for a brewery or has friends that are brewers that own a brewery,
yeah,
we would love an official beer. We've had Founders before. We do like contests to figure who our beer is going to be, but we would love another official beer.
Founders giveaways.
Yeah, we do Founders giveaways. So if there's any brewers listening, any friends of brewers listening, we would love to get another official beer. Hit us up in the DMs on Twitter and we'll make that happen. But we have things to talk about tonight. So first, other than meat throat.
Milk steak?
Off the top, it is going to be the release of the national televised game schedule, number of games.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. The Red Wings with 13 nationally televised games this season, which is high.
Yeah. And now let's preface this, though. Majority of these will be on Bally Sports Detroit. So you're not completely blacked out. You're not losing out on Ken and Mick for a majority of them. But there's probably one, two, three, four, five games we might be without. So we'll see what happens. So, I mean, we got 8, I think it was, for ESPN and or Hulu and ABC. One of them being the season opener at New Jersey. So that'll be kind of nice. Detroit's getting thrown out there for national exposure right at the start of the season. And then we finished things up pretty much with the Capitals on ESPN on 4-9. And then we've got 5 more games that are going to be on TNT broadcasts. It looks like only one of those, from what I could tell, did not have a local broadcast. And it looks like it's going to be the Avalanche game on March 6th. But outside of that, we're again first week of the season with the Penguins. So we'll have 2 games hitting a national broadcast in some fashion within the first week. And then we'll have more after that.
Yeah, the TNT broadcasts are great. Jackie Redmond does a fantastic job. She's like,
the whole crew does.
I feel like Jackie Redmond and Daniela need to get on like a broadcast together and just crush it. I feel like that would be fantastic.
Now, do you bring Jackie to Detroit or do we make the push to get Daniela national?
I would make the push to get Daniela to national because I feel like going from national to local is not as big of a deal. So I would send Daniela to TNT to do a broadcast, a Red Wings broadcast with Jackie Redmond.
Can we get her to sign a no move clause before that?
Yeah, we're going to have to do, we're going to have to get some trade protection thrown on there. But to follow this up, and for as much talk as they do, and I guess we'll just dig the knife in a little bit, the Ottawa Senators have a resounding zero nationally televised games.
In the United States. We'll preface in the United States. But sure. It's hilarious.
Yeah, the United States doesn't get free hockey for everyone like Canada does. But along with the Sens, the Habs, the Jets, and the Calgary Flames also have zero nationally U.S. nationally televised games. The Arizona Coyotes even have one. And for as much as the league loves Trevor Zegras, the Ducks have three.
Yeah.
So there were some numbers on here I think were kind of surprising. Toronto has 11. Yep.
And then you got McJesus getting, what, 18? I think they had the most.
Yeah, that would be the most U.S. televised Canadian team would be the Edmonton Oilers with 18, which makes sense.
For the two teams, I mean, you've got Auston Matthews and Connor McDavid getting the most, hopefully. In particular, I mean, we know that Toronto games are going to be majority East Coast, I would assume. I haven't looked at their actual game breakout, but I really hope that a lot of those are McDavid, like on the East Coast or at least Central Time Zone games, because not having him their away games to showcase him to the East Coast in particular is a travesty.
Yeah, but you can go check out the schedule. Ryan tweeted out all the individual games. The one that he said is in 2014 is, in fact, in 2024.
Yeah.
We're not doing a time travel game. Those haven't been introduced yet.
It was a great call out on the tweet, though. I laughed.
Yeah, Ryan can, you can go to Ryan's Twitter at RDJ33.
We played the Kraken in 2014, if you guys were curious. That's that.
Yeah, we go back in time to a team that wasn't even around then. That's a feat that I don't think anyone has done yet. But we want to move on to Joe Valeno. Joe Valeno finally signed a contract.
Yay. Which happened, of course, right after we posted last episode.
Oh, yeah. It always does. No one ever follows our schedule because why would they? Our schedule doesn't matter. Yeah. So Joe Valeno signed a one-year contract, which was interesting, at a AAV of $825,000, which was also interesting because it was lower than his entry-level contract.
I mean, this is a, to me, it's a shit or get off the pot contract, is it not?
I would say yes. And I would say that could even take effect before the season even starts.
Yeah, it could, because you can bury that contract and like it's nothing.
Sure. And say a guy like Marco Kasper comes in and blows the brakes off of preseason. Say a guy like Carter. Now, Casper's going to be a different story because I don't think I'm playing Marco Kasper unless he can get second line minutes in the NHL. But you can play a Carter Mazur in a bottom six role and not hurt his development one bit. And if he beats out a Joe Valeno, if he overperforms Joe Valeno in preseason, you can bet that Joe Valeno will be headed to Grand Rapids.
Yeah.
Because that is something that I have people have tried talking to me about for the past week. Is that all these free agent signings, there's no room for anyone else. And even if a prospect outperforms someone already on the roster, there's no way that they're going to be able to make room to put them in, to which I call BS.
So does that make Robbie Faber your fourth line center or Rasmussen?
I'd play Raz at wing still. Raz isn't probably be on the third line.
You think so?
Yeah, I mean, I'm comfortable playing Faber at 4C. I'm not comfortable playing him center any higher than the fourth line.
No.
But I'd be comfortable with him at 4C on the fourth line. At the same time, though,
I mean, you see more often than not, a fourth line is out there to shut down a second or even sometimes a top line defensively, because you've got strong defensive forwards on that fourth line.
Yeah, but so, you got to figure if a Daniel Sprong's on that fourth line, mm-hmm. if a Clem Costin's on a fourth line, though I think he might play higher. Or Christian Fisher, or even a Carter Mazur. Carter Mazur can be a shutdown guy.
I'm more referring to who's going to win the draw.
I'd have to go back and look at Fabry's draw numbers, but I mean, it can't be much worse, right?
Ideally. Let's see. Pulling it up now. Robbie Faber barely has touched center in Detroit.
What about career-wise?
Not much. Like, it's few and far. Like, he was 10 of 16 last year, 54 or 55 the year before that, 83 of 107 the year before that.
So he 107 can take draws.
2021 was the most center time he has seen ever.
Which was, and it was probably higher than 4C.
Not even. So, well, all right. In that case, let's look at Joe Valeno, see what his center numbers are. Last season, 42%, 277 out of 374 losses.
So Fabry's before, better at the draw.
42% versus 38. Yeah, he is.
Well, Steve?
I mean, it depends on the year you look at for Fabry, but if you've got a guy going to center, the odds are it's going to be Joe Valeno. So Fabry, I mean, I doubt that he is playing center at that point. So I think you're pretty much falling on Rasmussen, or you're rotating some of your other guys at center on particular defensive zone faceoffs. So maybe you have Larkin coming in for that. This is not what's going to happen. I'm saying this is what you could see happening, because some teams do this. They bring in their top center, try to win that draw, get them off the ice. We see it all the time. That could be sure. What maybe Detroit does in the absence of a Valeno.
I just don't think that you're going to force Joe Valeno onto the lineup just because he's a center. If someone outplays him, like I said, if a Carter Mazur outplays him, Carter Mazur is going to get that roster spot, and you're going to figure it out, because you're not going to keep a guy who underperforms just because of positional play, because there is a guy like in Fabry who can play center. So that's I think that's the rub right there, is that Joe Valeno's on a contract right now that's very easy to move. If you look at the projection that that Evolving Hockey had for him, Joe Valeno was projected to get a 2-year contract at $1.42 million.
Mm-hmm.
If he was going to sign a 1-year, it would have been over $900,000, and he came in under. So this contract, like you said, to me screams, hey, you better hurry up. Like, you're about to get passed by guys. And that's going to be the hard part, is you're going to get passed and you're going to get traded. You're going to go to Grand Rapids. So this is I feel like it's a huge prove it contract for Joe Valeno.
Yeah, it's, and I really do think he's do or die when it comes to the center, because Sprong's not going to center. I'm going through some of the guys we brought in. Fisher, I think Fisher was sparingly at center as well. Yeah, he can do it. He can be on the draw, but more or less it's because someone got tossed out. So it's not going to be Fisher, not going to be Sprong. Yeah, JT Compher, who took 1,600 faceoffs alone last season at center at a 48% pace. And then you look at Detroit's remaining, Larkin had 1,300, Kopp had 1,200, and then Joe Valeno was your number three center taker in Detroit. And Raz probably would have been past him had he not gotten hurt. I think they're okay at the center spot, don't get me wrong, but I doubt it's going to be Fabry unless they really have a change or shift in what they're trying to do for him. Because if you throw him in the center spot with those knee injuries and his history, I feel like that's going to put more strain on him that needs to be there.
Do you think so? Even though center, he's going to be less likely to go to the boards?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the way I look at it is the reliance of having to really, I mean, we see how he is on the penalty.
You mean the shift and pivot?
Yeah, just the working through the middle. We already know that he's going to be out there trying to block shots. We've seen that before. So I don't know. I'm being overly cautious of what could happen with Fabry at this point, because one more injury and he's done, in my opinion. We'll have to get the doctors back on to talk about what impact that could have.
Yeah. But so I think it also shifts to one more mid-season in Joe Valeno's done, because I don't think like this is
he's put himself into a replaceable situation.
Yeah, which is a bad spot to be in.
And that's not to take away from where he's at. I mean, we love Joe. But now
you really struggled to say that. You really struggled to say we love Joe.
Trying to articulate how I wanted to say it, Greg. There's a difference.
We love you, Joe. Please do
mojo.
Good.
We got to have the mojo show. Come on.
Yeah, there's not really anything else that rhymes with Mo that you could put on with Mo to form a different show. So I guess we got to keep Joe.
Wow. You well done. Well done on the rhyme time there. It's turned into an episode of Sesame Street brought to you by PBS.
So before I continue down that rabbit hole, we're going to move on to Filip Zadina, because we said we're going to break a promise. I believe we said in the last episode that we talked about Filip Zadina that we would never talk about him again on this podcast. And we're going to break that promise because Bob Duff over at Detroit Hockey Now wrote an article entitled "Zadina Believes Red Wings Brought Him into the NHL Before His Time." And I picked out some quotes. So he did this article, or he did this interview over in, was it the Czech Republic?
It was the Czech. When I did the Google Translate, I translated the entire article, which wasn't that bad. But
it says it's a hockeysverige.se, which would be a Swedish article.
Yeah, that threw me off.
Yeah, so he told writer Uffe Boden that it is tough for a young rookie to come to a team under rebuilding like Detroit was, which, okay, I guess, but most high-end rookies go to bad teams because that's where they're drafted. He also says such a team does not have a strong core as other clubs have. He was happy and lucky that he got a chance to be in the NHL so early, which he probably wouldn't have gotten with other clubs. But that being the case, Zadina would soon be discovering that he was in over his head. He said he tried his best that time, but if you're not Connor McDavid or Austin Matthews, it is difficult to make a difference. To which I call bullshit. Absolutely. Because there are plenty of young players that score more than 3 goals and are not named Connor McDavid or Austin Matthews. So I think that's a little bit of him trying to, in his head, say, oh God, I'm not as good as McDavid or Matthews, so there's no way I could make a difference on this team. But that doesn't make sense because the team is bad, so you're getting more of a chance to prove yourself.
Yeah, to me, it says more about, like we were talking about in the Discord today. Like, there's been a lot of comments since I posted it, but I mean, you had a kid at the time, NHL Central Scouting midterm second among North American skaters. ISS, which I'm not sure what that is, I didn't click the link, was third. McKean's Hockey, one of the top prospect rating, like for hockey out there, had him
who's
second.
Been really close more often than not.
Had him as the number two ranked player in the draft for that year. He fell to sixth. We were like, oh my God, we've talked about this before. We were all super excited. But I mean, it's just this article, I don't want to say it was a bash on Detroit. They were in a terrible situation or coming into a terrible situation. He was showing that in Grand Rapids, he could handle it. He was scoring. He was below a point per game, which I guess at that point for a sixth overall pick, you would hope maybe that'd be a little bit higher, but it is what it is. He was playing well against men, against arguably the second best league in the world for hockey. But when it came to Detroit, like what bothers me, though, is that he said he was brought in too quick. He played 9 games. He was given a trial run, had a couple points, looked comfortable for the most part, at least to us. So to me, that comment is just like, how? If it would have been like a Rasmussen situation, I might buy that. Yeah, they rushed it. They didn't really have a choice with Raz. I mean, they could have just sent him back to juniors, but would that have helped him? And it wouldn't have. So they dealt with it, played him throughout that first year, then shipped him off to Grand Rapids. Now look where he's at. He's arguably maybe not what most people would like to see, but he's excelling and doing what he needs to do to help the team succeed, especially when he's on the ice. Zadina never had that piece click. And that's the frustration to see those comments.
Yeah. And like you said, he's going to get a chance with San Jose. But again, he's putting himself in the same situation. He's going to a team that's not good. That's not going to have a lot
Eric
of support.
Carlson.
Yeah. It's not going to have a lot of support for him to go in and just explode offensively. He says he still believes like he's gotten better. He's gotten faster. He's gotten stronger. But even saying all that stuff, like it hasn't translated to anything. And I think that's the biggest problem is that there's the translation isn't there. And when the translation's not there, then it still results in a large goose egg on the score sheet where nothing, there's no result. I mean, he ends the article by saying it's been 5 years since I was drafted and I'm still the same person. As a player, I'm bigger and faster and better. I still believe in myself. And it's just about being injury free and feeling the joy of the sport again. In the end, it doesn't matter where I am as long as I get to play hockey and have fun. And it's just, that's all great. But you can't throw a pity party saying you were brought in the league too early or that the team wasn't good enough. Because when you're a top pick or top 10 pick you're not going to a good team. That's just the nature of the NHL.
Unless you got lucky.
Yeah, unless you're the New York Rangers. So that's it. I don't feel bad for him. I shouldn't feel bad. He's playing in the NHL. He's still getting paid money to go play in California now. I just don't think that this interview was necessary, I guess. I don't think it was necessary to say,
it was just a home. Is he back over there right now? Would that probably be where it would have came from? So he's probably in a training thing. Like, hey, let's have a talk.
Maybe. I mean, that could be it. But I mean, it's, I don't.
Your speculation on our part. But yes, I would agree with you overall.
I don't feel like he needed to go out and say like, oh, I was brought into it. Could be you can put the onus on yourself.
That doesn't do you any favors, to be honest. Like.
Cool. No, it doesn't endear you to anyone.
No, like we know everyone knew what Detroit was at that point when he was brought in. The reason that he was drafted in that spot was to change that dynamic of the core that he said wasn't strong. But it never happened. Like, I get it. There's a lot of pressure put on 18, 19 year old kids. But that is the nature of the beast when it comes to the NHL, especially when you're a top 10 pick. Now, Raz, I think, has had equal pressure because he was ninth overall. But again, you look at what each one has done the last several years. One has heavily improved. The other has not. I get it. And both have had injuries.
So this will be the last time officially that we talk about Filip Zadina on this podcast, unless he's traded back to Detroit. And I don't see that happening.
Why would you say that?
So what we're going to do is we're going to go. The second part of the episode, we're going to go through some listener questions. I put out a call for questions like really late today and actually got quite a few. First, we are going to do a read from DraftKings. This is going to be a live read because we got a new script and I haven't been able to pre-record anything. So I'm going to go through this right now. College football fans, are you ready for week one? DraftKings Sportsbook is hooking you up with a can't-miss offer to start the season strong. This week, new customers can bet just $5 on college football and score $200 in bonus bets instantly. Anything can happen in college football. Your team could go from unranked to dynasty mode in just a couple of years. Change comes fast. The only thing that is a lock is the great offers from DraftKings Sportsbook. Life's more fun when you're in on the action. Download DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code THPN. New customers can score $200 in bonus bets instantly when they bet just $5 on college football. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook. With code THPN, the crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPENY or text HOPENY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. See dknng.co/football for eligibility, terms, and responsible gaming resources. Bonus bets expire 7 days after issuance. Eligibility and deposit restrictions apply. Even if you're not going on vacation, summer's all about a vacation state of mind. Whether I want to listen to my Spotify playlists on repeat or just need to retreat inside my own head for a bit, I love creating my own summer soundtrack by popping in my Raycon wireless earbuds. There is so much going on all summer. Sometimes you need some upbeat music to pump you up before you see people or to stay calm with some guided meditation. Right now, I'm just listening to podcasts on my walks downtown when I get lunch at work, and it's really helping me keep my composure to get to that giant list of emails. Let me tell you right now, Raycons are the best way to listen. Use earbud tap functions to toggle between three customizable sound profiles, noise isolation, and awareness mode. Raycons have a 32-hour battery life, including 8 hours of playtime, so you can listen to what you want, when you want, for a really long time. They come with custom gel tips for the most comfortable in-ear fit and start at half the price of other premium audio brands, but they sound just as good. And Raycons come with a 30-day happiness guarantee, so you can't really lose. Create your own soundtrack with Raycon right now. Grindline podcast listeners can get 15% off their Raycon order at buyraycon.com/THPN. That's buyraycon.com/THPN to save 15% on Raycons. Buyraycon.com/THPN. And all of that, Ryan.
Holy
all
of shit. That.
It's a lot of stuff,
I
dude.
Really There's appreciate a, the fact that it's pre-recorded.
Yeah, it's the disclaimers, man. Oh. The full page of betting disclaimers is what really gets me. But we're going to move on to the last half of the show where we got some listener questions. So initially, we were going to talk about prospect tournament, but I think we'll save that for next week when we are a week closer to prospect tournament. Then we can talk about it. But I want to start with questions. So we're going to start it off with our friend Lars. So Lars Thorsell at Lars Thorsell on Twitter says, which Swedish Red Wings prospect playing in the SHL or Hockey Allsvenskan are you looking forward to following the most this season and why? And Ryan, I'm going to let you take it first and then I will give my answer.
I mean, I feel like for how much I swoon over him, it's got to be Pelika, Axel Rose, Brian Rafalski 2.0.
The Axeman. Are we just going to start make up names off the fly for him?
Hell yeah. We're gonna have a full-on nickname in the next month. You can call it recency bias. I don't really care. But watching him with the puck over the last year, especially in leading into the draft, has me really excited for what he likely will bring to the Red Wings blue line. So I'm taking the easy way out and going with the Asp.
Yeah, Snake. That's another good name for him. I think that's the one that I came up Snake with a few weeks ago. So he's a good bet. I think because he's so dynamic. And like you said, the Brian Rafalski comparison, even though it's like super early in his career, it's seeing what the future of the blue line is going to look like.
I mean, would you argue that he's, this is a stretch, I mean, do you make any similarities to a Carlson outside of Rafalski? Or is
plays defense though.
I know
Carlson doesn't play defense.
I'm talking about the offensive upside.
Like last year Carlson or previous, because last year Carlson previous. I think was a complete anomaly.
Last year Carlson is insanity and
doesn't make sense
things I've ever seen.
So maybe I think there is a definite offensive upside to Pelika, but the defense is also there. So that's the thing, is like if you can get a Carlson level offense with the defense that he also provides, he's a better player at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So my answer is going to be Noah Dower-Nilsson. It's only because when we talked to Tony, he had told us that a lot of Noah Dower-Nilsson's impact from what he had watched was him just being there. Like a lot of right place at the right time, a puck hits him in the ass and it goes in the net.
If you look
stuff
up puck
like that.
Puck in the dictionary, he's probably right. That's his picture that's on there.
Yeah. I want to see if his game evolves into more purposeful moves, I guess is the way I would put it, into more detailed and thought oriented play instead of just right place, right time. Because I think if he can, and hockey IQ, they say, is something you're born with, not really something you develop. But if he can become a better, I guess, not just setup guy, but get a little bit better vision and make things look a lot more purposeful in what he's doing and still keep up that level of offense, I think you've got a really solid player there. So he knows what he needs to work on. He seems like a super humble dude and really understands the process and what's going to happen going forward. So I would say Noah Dower-Nilsson because it's an offensive threat, I think, that's not talked about a lot in a system that is starving for offensive talent. Now, you're starting to see a little more with Amadeus Lombardi and Carter Mazur and Cross Hannes. But you need to keep filling that pipeline just in case guys like that don't hit at the NHL level. So I would say Noah Dower-Nilsson.
That's fair. More recency bias, I guess one could argue. But at the same time, like, I guess that's what you hope for based on what's out there, right?
Yep, absolutely. Next question is from Jennifer Morris at Jennifer996979952. You couldn't add the R and then the numbers? I don't know. What are some combinations that could be effective in overtime? Oh. And which one of those combinations should be first on the ice for OT? So all first combinations must include Dylan Larkin, because it's Dylan Larkin overtime.
Give me Larkin, DeBrinket, Gostisbehere.
Okay, I could do Larkin, DeBrinket, Gostisbehere. I was going to say Larkin, DeBrinket, Seider.
Fair.
Was going to be mine. Good. Because Seider's more defensive.
Maybe some defensive-minded forward.
I would say my second overtime pairing would probably be, let's say, Lucas Raymond, David Perron, and Ghost. Now, Perron is going to be a little slow.
I think Perron's going to be stuck to the wing. I think your secondary line would be a Confer, Raymond, and then insert defenseman.
Okay.
Or Kopp.
I mean, that I'm not sure I would put Kopp in there. I want some. Now, my only problem with Perron was speed.
Fully healthy Kopp.
Okay. So, fully healthy Kopp, I could do Kopp, Raymond, and Ghost.
I would like
as
that.
As the second OT unit. Or.
Bergy?
No. Sprong, ooh. Raymond, Ghost. Out there.
But who's taking draws?
It's overtime. Just let someone take a draw, dude.
Yeah, but you see how impactful having the faceoff win is.
I do, but do you sacrifice the offensive firepower just for the faceoff?
I mean, how many
faceoffs do you see in overtime, Ryan?
Well, I mean, think about a couple years ago when we still had Luke Lindenning. He would take in overtime. He would take the defensive zone draw. And then bolt off the ice after he wins.
Do that. Like the pair that's going to be, or the line that's going to be out there. I might want to see a Sprong Raymond Ghost.
Ooh.
So that, I mean, fun. there are, I would say.
You know what I think would be a fun line? A Berggren, Wallman, and Perron. If we're now getting into the depths a little bit.
You know what makes us awesome is we can just throw lines out there and they sound great. But I think to answer Jennifer's question, the first one you throw out's got to be DeBrincat, Larkin, and Sider. That would be my first three because that's the firepower.
That's fun.
It's fun.
That's a fun line.
It's a good question, too.
I mean, really,
so
what you
Jennifer.
Could do if you're not looking for, if Ghost isn't out there, you could even do a Kopp, Berggren and Raymond, or Confer, Berggren, Raymond, because you've got a defensive minded guy out there with two forward guys. If you're really not trying, but I don't think you abandon.
And you don't have to really worry about size and overtime.
No, unless you're trying to go for puck retrievals, but that's few and far between it more often. I mean, when you watch it at 3-on-3,
and so Lalonde has said that Raymond put on 8 to 9 pounds this offseason. And doesn't even look like the same player, he said, which I noticed. And then everyone tried to tell me I was wrong.
I don't think anyone told you wrong, did they?
No, yeah. There are people like, I don't see any difference in Raymond. I'm like, did you watch the video of him and Mo at Lions like practice where he literally
looks? I
didn't
look that closely. It wasn't
so
a hockey
much
butt
beef.
Commercial, so I didn't really take too much interest in it.
Beautiful. Thank you, Ryan. We're going to move on to Lucas's question. Lucas Mountain at Lucas Mo on Twitter. There's a lot of S's in his username. It says probably a bit early to be talking trade deadline pieces, but which player on an expiring contract is most likely to be on the trade block come 2024? I can see Yzerman trading Perron at the deadline, regardless of standings. I don't see Yzerman buying until they are cup contenders. So I had pulled up here we go. So cap friendly, and you can all see it on your beautiful screen right here. Your options are David Perron, mm-hmm. Daniel Sprong, Christian Fisher, and then you have three RFAs. So you've got Joe Valeno, Lucas Raymond, and Berggren. Wouldn't even worry about that. You've got, is it Olimata as well? You've got, no, not Olimata. You've got Shane Gostisbehere, who's a UFA. And you've got Mo Sider and Jared McIsaac, who are RFAs. James Reimer is a UFA in 2024-25. Perron? And maybe Sprong, depending on his season. I'm not sure there's going to be a lot of A, reason, or B, interest in Christian Fisher.
Fisher would be like a Sunny.
A
Sunquist situation where he's doing a little bit of everything, but nothing that really truly stands out. But he can be a good depth guy for a cap-strapped playoff team.
Yeah, I could see that. I think Perron is probably your main guy right there. He's 35 years old. If you're having a down year and you don't think you're making a playoff, if we have another down year and you don't think you're making a playoff push.
Yeah.
He's a guy that you're going to look for.
I wouldn't even go as
contender.
Far as saying not making a playoff push.
Really?
I think you've got flexibility regardless.
Because you can bring guys in. There we
Bingo.
Go.
Bingo. And I... Props to Pete for hounding me on this one, because he sees the Wings being sellers, but it's not for a lack of trying or not being in the playoff push or being in a spot to contend. It's a deal comes through like a Perron where you have a great offer, so you do it. However, that now opens the door. You've got a Carter Mazur and or a Marco Kasper. Come on down.
Yeah.
Because I tell you right now, if you trade either some forwards or some defensemen, you potentially upgrade.
Yeah, I think to the second part of the point, I also don't see Yzerman being a buyer for a couple years. But I think the selling to sell because we suck, I think is done. I don't think there's going to be any just massive sell-offs. You might, like you're right, you might see a couple guys on expiring contracts go. You might see Yzerman try, like the Red Wings absolutely could push for a playoff spot. And at that point, you may see Yzerman try and ship out a pick with Ben Chiarot just to open up a defensive slot to make the team better. Because if Edvinson's killing it in Grand Rapids and you're stuck with Ben Chiarot, yeah, and you're stuck with Chiarot Johansson, you're going to need to try to get rid of that contract to make it to the playoffs, to know you're going to be good or at least decent in the playoffs. You're going to have to make a move there. So I think they'll sell some, but not for lack of effort, just for flexibility in the roster and possibility of making the roster better from within.
Yeah,
I think is where we're looking there.
So tell you right now, you trade a forward. You've got a Kasper, Mazur, Soderblom, maybe a Hannes. Like there are options that are going to be in Grand Rapids.
Depending maybe late in the season, a Lombardi.
Yep. Or even, who knows, maybe Alexander Doucette comes in.
Alex Doucette, the guy everyone keeps forgetting about.
Yep. That maybe he comes in and actually is impactful in Grand Rapids. And that earns him an early call-up or even a deadline call-up. Like, we don't know. The options are there, and I'm not even going to touch the defense because we have basically destroyed them at this point in terms of what potential is there.
So from Sean Hunt at SJH_Cerebral said, I know you did your rankings already. We did. Go back and listen to that episode. It was really good. But the Athletics prospect rankings had Sider at 12 as an all-star, Raymond at 26 as a top of the lineup, Danielson at 32, top of the lineup, Edvinson at 40, top of the lineup, Kasper at 65, bubble top to middle, Pelika at 93, middle. He says, which one of these surprises you the most? For me, it was Kasper. I have a hard time seeing him anything below a high 2C, even on a championship team. I would say that the Kasper one surprises me, but honestly, so there's a couple surprises. Kasper one surprises me because of the middle ranking, but I mean,
was
it's
this
a
the
loose middle.
23 and under rankings? I didn't see this one. That's why I was curious.
He didn't send a link, but that would be my guess. Pelika is the one that I think surprises me. I think the tools are there and the talent is there where he could be a top to middle defenseman. I think he's one that's going to surprise a lot of people with how he plays. And simply because when you listen to his interviews, it's the dedication that's there. So that I think is the one. And then I think the other one that might surprise me is a Danielson, but only because I haven't seen, I think, enough of him at a higher level.
Because he's ahead of Ed?
Well, because he's ahead of Kasper.
And Kasper.
So that I think is the surprise to me, is that he's ahead of Kasper, where I need to see a little bit more of Danielson. Because to rank Danielson at 32 and to rank Kasper at 65, I think that's a huge gap. And I don't think that's a gap that can really be backed up right now with the amount of play you have on each guy.
So this is indeed from, this is Pronman, I'm assuming. Yeah, Corey Pronman posted this 2 days ago, ranking the best NHL players and prospects under the age of 23. So the fact that it is NHL players and you've got Danielson at 32, pretty good.
Now I'm interested in who the 11 above Sider are.
I can look here in a second. It's nice. They actually added filters now, so you can go by team. But I mean, he's got a general comment for the profile on Danielson. So I don't really know. I mean, the two-way game, and we saw glimpses of it at the prospect camp. Like he,
as much as you could see.
Like there's speed. defensive smarts, and he's got a hell of a wrister. Things that we did to already kind of talk about. So if that's the case and you've got a debate over who your 2C is going to be, potentially 1C between him and Casper, okay, sold. Let's go.
And Danielson will be at the prospect tournament. So that will be an interesting thing to keep an eye on, too.
Here's your top 11. I'm going to start from bottom up. So ahead of Sider, Cole Caulfield's at 11. Leo Carlson.
Stop.
Is 10.
Cole Caulfield is above Sider?
Mm-hmm.
Continue.
Luke Hughes is 9th.
Oh, okay.
That's interesting. Trevor Zegras is 8th.
No way.
Matty Beniers is 7. I can't.
Okay.
I can agree with that one. Dylan Cousins is 6.
Come on.
Matvei Michkov is 5. Fantilli is 4. Stutzla, 3. Jack Hughes, 2. And then Connor Bedard is 1.
Great. I could disagree with at least half of three. Well, 3 or 4 at least. Are there? Okay. It's fine. Whatever. I'm surprised with the whole list.
I don't know.
There you go, Sean. I'm surprised with the whole list now, apparently. We're going to move on to Adam Kerr at Adam Kerr 05. Do you think that Draisaitl in 2025 or Nylander in 2024 are realistic free agent signings for Detroit? I think Draisaitl could put the Wings over the top and make us ready to contend in 2 years from now. Also, the German connection with Mo. So I also pulled numbers here. So if you look at Leon Draisaitl, in 2022-23, he had 80 games played, 52 goals, and 76 assists for 128 points. In his career, he has 638 games played with 306 goals and 438 assists for 744 points. His projected WAR on JFresh is 100% with an EV offensive 98, but a low defense at 7%. So he's not a defensive player at all. Not a defensive center by any stretch of the imagination.
You've got a guy that can snipe from the goal line off in the corner.
From the blue line. I don't really care
if he can play defense or not.
Yeah, we're fine there. William Nylander last season in 82 games played had 40 goals and 47 assists for 87 points. In his career, had 521 games played, 177 goals, and 253 assists for 430 points. He has a projected WAR of 87% with an EV offense of 97 and an EV defense of 15. He's better defensively than Draisaitl, but that does not matter. What I'm looking at are contracts, because you're saying these are free agents we're going to sign. And William Nylander's projected, now this is if they were free agents this season, right now, would have signed a 7-year contract at a AAV of $9.63 million. Leon Draisaitl, 7 years at a predicted cap hit of $13.69 million. So what this tells me is that there is no way when Leon Draisaitl's contract is up that he's signing with Edmonton. That would put Edmonton in, because McDavid is there and taking up a lot of cap space. There is no way that they are going to have, they'll have the money to do it, probably, but they're not going to have it would not be smart spending at that point to take that contract on.
Let's look at it this way. He expires in the 24-25 season, Draisaitl. McDavid expires a year after that.
So it's like a which one do you want to lose situation?
Pretty much. Like, do you want to go through the Gretzky 2.0 scenario? But in this situation, you haven't won 4 cups.
Yeah, you've won absolutely nothing.
I mean, who knows what could happen over the next 3 seasons in the remainder of McDavid's contract, but I'm not holding my breath.
So I will tell you that his last year is 2024-25, right? Or he expires Leon expires in 2024-25.
He'll be there through the end of the 2025 year.
Okay, so he is a free agent in 25-26.
Correct.
So if you look at the Detroit Red Wings in 2025-26.
A lot of money.
They have 4 forwards under contract in Dylan Larkin, Alex DeBrincat, Andrew Kopp, and JT Compher. They have 3 defensemen under contract in Ben Chiarot, God help us all, Justin Hole and Jake Walman, and they have no goalies. They are paying the last year of Justin Abdelkader's buyout, and they've got guys on entry-level contracts in Nate Danielson, Marco Kasper, Carter Mazur, Alex Doucette, Amadeus Lombardi, William Wallander, and Simon Edvinson, as well as Sebastian Kosa, all of them on the last year of their ELC. So there will be some money to spend there. Not a lot, though, I don't think.
Yeah.
The Red Wings are going to have a metric shitload of cap space to where they should be able to do anything they want. They've got picks to trade. Yzerman, like we have said for a while, has set them up on a rolling cap so that contracts fall off as new contracts come on, which leaves them open to bringing in big money contracts when they're ready. And if the Red Wings make the playoffs this season, and even if they don't, they make the playoffs next season, they're starting to push. And when they're starting to push, they're going to have money free to make big free agent acquisitions like a Nylander, like a Draisaitl. And it should be a destination players want to go to because of the youth coming up, one of the best prospect pools in all of hockey, because of the management team, because of the players on the roster, guys like Mo, guys like Raymond, guys like Larkin, that I think you're right. It makes us a contender. Leon Draisaitl makes us a contender almost instantly. I would say. Like that's a piece instantly makes you a contender. Doesn't even matter.
Now you're talking about a situation. Now to calm people down, this is hypothetical in a dream. You would have Draisaitl, Larkin, DeBrincat, Kopp, and Compher under contract. You have to make the safe assumption that Lucas Raymond's under a new contract by that point. So there's your now top portion under main big contracts. Then you're going to have likely a Danielson coming knocking on the door or making the roster. You're going to have a Kasper making the roster. You're going to have a Mazur making the roster.
Lombardi.
Possibly a Lombardi. Is that about nine more?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Close. You've built out a roster, not including any other potential free agents that you could bring in. Is this a pipe dream? Sure. Don't care. It's fun to think about, though.
I mean, it's not realistic. Like, it's... No. There's nothing there. The only thing that is hinges on realism is bringing in a Draisaitl. That's it.
Yeah, totally.
Everything else is almost, at this point, I would say, as close to a lock as you're going to get. As you would think in three seasons that a Lombardi would be ready. In three seasons that a Danielson would be ready. Marco Kasper could be ready as quickly as this season.
Yeah.
So,
but that's going to be the type of thing that I think Detroit's going to need to push them over a hump.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Nylander could do it too, but to a lesser extent.
Yeah.
I think Nylander, you're still playing behind a Dylan Larkin as a 2C, which would shift Kopp down, which would shift Compher down. But it's...
You can do what Toronto is doing now, and you could just stack your top line, which I have no issue with as well.
Yeah, but I think Draisaitl would be my play, absolutely 100%, to say, hey, Kenny, we're going to get this iron in the fire here really, really early. And whenever it comes up, we're gonna go ahead and take a shot at getting Draisaitl. And I think that would be the safest play there.
That'd be so great.
From Red Rogue at Red Rogue 71, who do you think will wear the A's this year? And how many road and home rotated does Mo have an opportunity to wear an A? Mo, I think, absolutely does.
Two-part question.
Yeah. So, and the Mo thing, absolutely. Did he wear an A in preseason last year?
I'd have to check. I want to say yes.
Yeah, I think Mo absolutely has an opportunity to wear an A, whether it be permanent or rotating. I think you're going to give Andrew Kopp an A.
I think Kopp and Perron are your locks for an A.
Perron gets an A. If you're looking at rotating A's, Michael Rasmussen could absolutely get a rotating A. Mm-hmm. Every guy in camp wants to play with Michael Rasmussen. Rask could get a rotating A. Ben Chiarot got a rotating A last year, I believe. So that's another one there.
It's hard with this roster now because of the guys they've brought in. Because Ghost could do it. Hull could do it. We've seen, I think Mata, I don't remember if he had any one on it at one point last year, but Jeff Petrie could wear an A.
Oh, absolutely.
DeBrincat can wear an A.
Kopp, he has.
Compher, I think Perron's your lock as a permanent A.
That's the thing with Yzerman. Yzerman brings in all these guys with leadership experience and who have worn letters before and who have been there. So like, you could literally see like, oh guys, we're going to have like 12 A's this season that are all going to rotate. So every three, you get it for three games and you get it for three games. And
yeah, it'll probably be a crazy mix because I know we saw several guys get it in preseason in particular last year. I would like to say that Mo and Perron are your locks, but I don't want to die. I think Perron for sure has an A on all season.
Yeah, that's probably that's the safest bet is giving Perron a permanent A next season. But like we said, it's like it's a lot of guys that came in with the leadership experience. Like DeBrincat wore an A in Ottawa. He's probably going to get a rotating A in Detroit. I mean,
you think so?
I think so. I think he's been around long enough and has done it before. I think he also wore an A in Chicago, if I'm not mistaken.
Ooh, I don't know.
So I'd have to go back and look. But yeah, I think that you'll probably see several guys. From GameGab at GameGab Detroit, season predictions for the wing this year, playoffs, a lot of doubters out there, but we got to let the playing do the talking. Agree, and I think I'm already on team playoffs this season. That's my team. I'm going to keep asking. I'm going to ask you every episode until the regular season starts.
I want to say yes, but I struggle to say that it's definitive.
So Ryan says no.
I'm still partly on team no, and I will totally eat fucking crow for that one if it comes down to it. But I just think that our division is too damn hard.
Ryan, if you're saying no and we do make it, you have to do a shoey on Cam.
Why?
Because. And if I'm saying we are going to make it,
because I'm not doing it in my office.
I'm saying we are going to make it, and I will do a shoey if we don't. So there's the deal right there.
Hate you.
All right. Thank you. Last question of the night from Chris at Fopac Jack on Twitter. God. Extended Yzerman. Now this.
Oh, what is going on here?
So this is a confusing thing. General manager contracts are like a goddamn anomaly. It's like trying to find the lost city of Atlantis. No one knows where they are unless they're announced on Twitter. No one tracks all the general manager contracts. I have searched the internet. I messaged Daniela. Daniela says, I have no idea. I can't find it. I don't have time right now to reach out to Bob Duff, but the one thing I could find was in an article when someone asked Yzerman about when he first got here and they asked him about the rebuild. His comment was something to the effect of, I guess we'll see where we are in 5 years, which made people think he has a 5-year contract, which this would be the last year of his contract at that point. So if, in fact, this is the last year of Steve Yzerman's contract, and you ask, are we extending Steve Yzerman? My answer is a resounding yes.
Yeah.
Give him another 5-year contract. I would put, and this is all because I would say, I would put the Red Wings rebuild, just in sum total of the rebuild, on track, if not ahead of schedule. And I might have said just on track before the acquisition of Alex DeBrincat, but getting DeBrincat here, I would say we are probably a little bit ahead of schedule on the rebuild. And that's also a lot dependent on what young guys come in this, what rookies come in this season and what they do.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that if this is the last year of Yzerman's contract, it doesn't get extended. If you don't, I think you're absolutely
ridiculous. Does get extended.
But how did I say that?
You said it doesn't get extended.
Sorry, I meant to say yes, he absolutely gets an extension. If it's not for 5 more years, I'd be very surprised, which apparently we just will never know because it just goes into the ether and we find
out. It's just like you're a GM, but it's like for how long, and we want to know. And now every time that happens, I'm going to ask.
Yeah, so I it's stupid not to. And the people that are pissed off that he's not making the playoffs, just don't. I'm not going to go on that tangent right now. I don't feel like it. If the question was, does he get extended? Yes. If he's due, there's no question about it. And to think otherwise, I question your sanity.
Yeah, it's, I think that if the Red Wings don't make a serious push for playoffs this year, like if you're coming into like the break and they're like 10 points out of playoffs, then some people are going to start really questioning what's going on.
Like Christmas break or All-Star break?
Like Christmas break.
Okay.
People are going to really start.
Christmas break, they were in a good spot. It was right before, it was right after All-Star break,
they were in a good spot.
All-Star break, decent spot. It was leading into the deadline, a week before the deadline.
So if you come to Christmas break and you're like 10 points behind, people are really going to start questioning. Now, would another losing, not losing season, but another non-playoff season put Yzerman on the hot seat? I'd say no.
I think I'd say that he's still safe. Where you finish or where you're trending in comparison to last year.
I think it also depends on the in-season moves that are made. So do we see rookies come in? Do we see guys start flailing like a Sherratt again, or do we see guys start flailing like a Joe Valeno, and then no corresponding moves be made?
See, to that point, I'm not worried, because we've already seen that he will very quickly make a move.
But if they're not,
then yes, fair.
Yeah. So I would say that Yzerman is safe. I would be, like you said, absolutely shocked if he doesn't get another 5-year extension, if this is in fact his last year of his contract. I think Yzerman is the kind of guy that they would keep around until he decides to retire. I don't think there's, unless something catastrophic happens and he pitches the team into another giant hole. I mean, it's the dude who brought the team out of the depths of hell back to like glory. And now he's trying to do it from a managerial role. And if he in fact does it, there is no reason to switch GMs at all.
Let's put it this way. So the Athletic did their front office confidence rankings. Detroit fell from 3rd to 12th. However, Yzerman, the grade that they've been given is still a B overall. And with the fan base, they're a strong B. Public perception, because people are idiots, is a C+.
Okay. I mean, I can't really. I guess the only things you could really hang your hat on for.
B+ on the fan base, C+ in the public.
But the only things you really hang your hat on for what may be perceived as a negative is, again, the Ben Sherratt contract. And now a bunch of people are going to say Justin Holl, but he hasn't played a single game in a Red Wings jersey. So that I'm going to hold off on any kind of judgment until I see 20 games of Justin Holl. And then I will let you know what I think. But I mean, I can't fault Yzerman for anything that he's done, really, because, again, he's built up that backlog of trust, and the moves he's made have been good, and people will complain again about Kopp. And you need to see what happens with Kopp this season, because if Kopp comes out this season and is the same Kopp as last season, then I might start to question. But he should be 100% healthy and should be a different player. He should be New York Rangers Andrew Kopp is what, or he should be
Winnipeg or Rangers.
I mean, or Winnipeg if Jets.
We're questioning Kopp at this point. It's not going to be because of what Yzerman did. It's going to be because of what Kopp wasn't able to recover from, and the fact that he may have not have just pushed himself to be back to what he used to be. That's where I would take that. But you're stuck with contract.
But I think that is all the questions we have. So I believe that's episode. You got any final thoughts there, Ryan?
Nope. Already ran 33.
Jesus Christ. I don't have any final thoughts either. Unless you want to sell me home opener tickets, because they're absolutely insane right now.
I am like, waiting for my freaking person to respond or reach out to me. I'm probably just going to email them. So if you are still needing tickets, I will inquire.
Yeah, I'm going to still need tickets, because I looked at resale market right now, and the section you're in are about $300 a ticket currently.
Oh,
so yeah, they're pretty nuts right now. But you can follow me online at Bringing the Wing. You can follow the Grindline Podcast online at Grindline Pod. That is me. If you tweet at Grindline Pod, it's at me. I will respond depending on how you tweet at me. So it'd be
about 1% of tweets come from me.
Anger or sarcasm. Those are generally the two tone of the tweets that you will get from the official account. You can follow us also on YouTube. Go to YouTube, subscribe to the Grindline Podcast. Turn on notifications.
The fun visuals that Greg makes.
Yeah, I put a lot of work into these episodes now. It's a lot more work, but it's a lot more informative, and it looks better, and people learn stuff. So, yeah, I just upped my game slightly. We like to give a shout out to the Hockey Podcast Network for hosting us and spreading us around all over the place. We also like to give a shout out to Vintage Detroit, which is the only place you get your Detroit jerseys from and worked on. They're absolutely amazing, and we should have some stuff coming up with them. We might do a show like live at their location. Ooh, that would be pretty sweet during the season.
Leading up to the home opener.
Yeah, I wonder if I can make it work scheduling-wise, but we'll see what happens there. But yeah, check them out. They're awesome. You can order stuff online from them. Like you said, it's like amazing. The work they do is impeccable. It's as close to like on ice as you're going to get the work they do. So it's fantastic.
And it's all hand done, like literally in shop, in store.
We've watched them do it.
It's amazing.
It's great. You can go to redbubble.com and search the Grindline to find our merch. We also give a shout out to Howie's Hockey Tape, where you see the promo code Grindline, you get 10% off. The same promo code on Bring Hockey Back, you'll get 12% off. And yeah, that's going to do it for us. So for Ryan, I am Greg. Hopefully Tyler in this time got the meat out of his throat. But you stay classy, Hockey Town.